welcome to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. I'm Kate Borsay, and to discuss all the head-aching wins and losses of Group C, it's Wales and Watford striker Helen Ward and Brazilian football writer, Arsenal Women's Arse Blog podcast host and writer Tim Stillman. Hello to you both. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Yourself?
I'm good. Not so many headaches for me now, I have to say, that this group is done and dusted. Tim?
Yeah, absolutely great. Great to be back.
Well, listen, it's great to have both of you in the studio here to help us digest and make our way through this one. And it's great to hear we are global in our listenership. That's official. People have been getting in touch to tell us where they're listening, on the train, at the gym, and some are just making us feel very jealous from their poolsides in Bali. We appear to be the English media's podcast of choice out in France. You're welcome, everyone. And many, many others are also tuning in as well. Do let your friends know, by the way, and we'll trump our own horn because we like to. All right, let's get on to tonight. So Tuesday means Group C, and this was the group of headaches, migraines even, and it could not have been tighter. So before tonight's games, Helen and Tim, Italy, Brazil and Australia could all still finish top of Group C. But on the night, it was this goal that made all the difference.
Oh, oh boy, that could be trouble. Pass four! McClure, not a moment she'll like to remember, but Kerr will pounce on any opportunity she is given.
That was Sam Kerr's fourth goal of the night in Australia's 4-1 win over Jamaica, which left Group C looking very equal as Italy, Australia and Brazil all finished with 6 points. So stick with us. It came down to goal difference first, and that means Italy finish top of Group C with a superior goal difference of 5. Brazil and Australia both end the group stage with a goal difference of 3. But Australia's win over Brazil meant that the Matildas finished in second, above Brazil in third. Got it?
I'm glad you worked all that out. I didn't have to.
All right, let's get into the action. Brazil took on Italy, 1-0 to Brazil, and it was a penalty from Marta that made the difference here. But it wasn't just any old penalty.
What a moment this is to become the all-time top scorer in World Cup history, men's and women's. Marta is a history maker. The outright record holder for most World Cup goals. Her 17th at World Cup finals. Italy 0, Brazil 1.
A very special night for Marta then, Helen. All-time World Cup record goal scorer, beating Germany's Miroslav Klose.
It's phenomenal, isn't it? It's so few words that you can use because it's just an unbelievable achievement. I think that's 107 goals in total that she scored for Brazil, which is fantastic in itself. But to go on and become the top scorer in World Cup history in, you know, both sides of the game is fantastic for her. Maybe a bit fortunate that the penalty was given because it was fairly soft, in my opinion.
But
she's going to be delighted with that. And well deserved and a fantastic achievement.
It was her 17th World Cup goal. And there has to be a bit of a nod between the Strikers Alliance here, doesn't there? From you to a player like Marta, who is not just a record goal scorer, but she's a huge symbol of the game over in South America and also throughout the world. She's one of the players we all know.
She is. And it's understandable to see why. She's so, so talented and she's driven the game forward in more ways than many players could ever imagine. She's come through that phase at her age. She's gone from the generation where there was nothing in women's football to now where there's so much going on, and she's been one of the driving forces in that. So for her to have this record is really special for her, and, you know, fully deserved, as I said. To beat that record is a phenomenal achievement in a team that hasn't really challenged at the back end of tournaments as well, you have to say. So to score that many goals in mostly group games and the early rounds of knockouts is unbelievable.
Tim, Brazilian football expert, we've got to bring you in at this point as well. It's Marta's fifth Women's World Cup, and a word from you on this.
Yeah, absolutely. Back in Brazil, she's known simply as a rainha, which means the queen. And this record actually means a lot to Brazilian people because they were fiercely proud of the fact that the record used to be held by Ronaldo. And it was a little bit traumatic for them that Miroslav Klose got it, not only because he took it off of Ronaldo, but he got it by scoring against Brazil in 2014. And that was quite devastating for them. And actually, when Marta scored in the first game against Australia, she did an interview afterwards with a German TV station, and she'd finished her interview and she stopped and she came back and went to the German journalist and said, "And I've equaled the record of Closer." So I think we can safely say this is something that was very important to her as well.
Brazil 1-0 winners then. Was that a fair result for you, Helen? The Italians were feisty, weren't they? The first half especially, quite a few fouls from them.
Yeah, they were up for it. Obviously, the Italians have shown what a good team they are in this tournament. There was a good battle going on between Dabinia and Bartoli in the first half down one side, and I think ended in Dabinia having a cut shot for her efforts. Mm-hmm. But I think the second half, Brazil stepped it up a little bit, put a little bit more pressure on the Italians, and they didn't really respond in an attacking sense, Italy. But yeah, I think Brazil edged it. It was always going to be quite a close game between two strong teams. But I think you saw that Brazil needed that result a little bit more than Italy. And that showed in the performance. And once Brazil did go ahead, Italy didn't really have any real response. Maybe one or two half chances towards the end, but nothing major. And I think Brazil just about edged it tonight.
Yeah, I was going to say that, actually. I wonder how much Italy not really needing a result influenced things, not least because that Brazil defence is not very good, and it still didn't look very good tonight to me. And I'm a bit surprised that some of these great attackers we've seen, like Girelli and Bonansea, weren't able to put them under a bit more pressure. And I just wonder if, you know, psychologically they'd kind of dipped 5 or 10% in that second half.
Well, Italy have scored in all 17 of their international games leading up to this. So got a great record there, but just couldn't do it today, could they? And they looked frustrated. For Brazil, though, Beatriz coming on in the second half made a huge difference for them, really. A game changer, almost.
Yeah, it really was. One of the kind of tactical problems for Brazil is they play a kind of 4-4-1-1, which is quite an old-fashioned formation to be using. And if you're going to use a formation like that, what you usually need are two quite energetic forwards. But Brazil have got Cristiani, who's 34 now. Marta is 33 and carrying a thigh injury. They didn't really have that energy other than from Dabinia. As soon as Beatriz came on, they had a little bit more energy again and someone to support Dabinia with that kind of directness.
Marta came off in the second half. She actually lasted longer, to be fair, than I thought she would. I think Brazil desperate to know that they were going to get the result really before taking her off fairly deep into the second half. A word on viewership over in Brazil, Tim, because this is quite interesting. In spite, of course, of that lack of support from the CBF, and this has been written about quite extensively, but how are the public engaging with this?
Yeah, there was an audience of 19 million for the game against Australia the other day. Bear in mind, obviously, it's a country of 200 million, so you have to take that into account. But this was a game that kicked off local time 1 p.m. on a Wednesday. And it was the second most watched women's football game ever on TV, eclipsed only by the US TV audience, the 2015 final. So it's fair to say, in that regard, they've really engaged and really taken this team to their hearts. And that's even more impressive because on the men's side, you know, Brazil are playing Copa America at the moment. They're hosting it. So there's a lot going on there, but people are still engaging with this team.
Football mad over in Brazil at the minute. Well, when isn't it, I suppose? This just in, post-match from Marta, by the way. It's a story not only for Marta, she says, but also for all women out there. Great quote. Thank you very much, Marta, for that one. A word on Formiga, Tim, who had something to say about Brazil.
Yeah, she gave an interview. I think it was conducted just before the tournament, but a quote really, really jumped out where she said, "To be honest, I'd prefer to be watching from home, and I'd, you know, ideally I'd prefer for someone younger to have taken my place." And she said, "In an ideal world, I'd still be playing for a club, but someone would have pushed me out of my spot." And she, you know, it was a very pointed comment towards the CBF and the way they just haven't really developed.
Which is the National Federation, we should say.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And they haven't really developed young talent. They're the oldest squad at this tournament. Their youngest player's 23. Not a lot coming through. And I think Formiga will still probably play in the Olympics next year.
Well, it's a quick one on Italy, Helen. First time ever an Italian women's international has been shown on the main free-to-air TV channel over there. Support gaining momentum.
Yeah, for sure. And I mentioned a few days ago that when we we've played for Wales against Italy recently, and it was a very, very chilly day up in Cesena, I think it's pronounced, and there was a good crowd there. So there's definitely something that they're building on. They obviously had a fantastic crowd at the Juventus game that was held at the Allianz Stadium,
yep,
which drew in a huge crowd.
Yeah.
So you can see that the team are thriving off of that support, and it's a bit of a win-win situation where the team are doing well, so the fans are backing it, and then that, you know,
the clubs are backing it too.
And that's showing. And I think Italy could grow into one of the really top teams in Europe. They've shown excellent performances so far. Today, not so great, but they were already through, as we'd mentioned.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot to be positive about for Italy.
Well, a quote just in from Italian coach Milena Bottolini at the end of the game. It's very much unexpected, she says, to top the group, because at the start of the tournament, our goal was to simply just make it through to the knockout stages. That would have been a great achievement. So you can imagine how this feels now, she essentially says. Great quote there, and well done to Italy. And just to say, if you want to know who Italy might face as top of the group and all the ramifications of who might meet who next, stay tuned. That's an attractive prospect, isn't it? Don't go anywhere for that. Who might meet who? The other tie in Group C saw Australia come up against Jamaica. Well, it was a convincing 4-1 win for Australia over Jamaica, and quite the night for Aussie superstar Sam Kerr, who gobbled up all four goals for the Matildas. There was a consolation for Jamaica, though, but they were roundly beaten, and the result means Australia finished second in the group. Four-goal Sam Kerr, that's what we can call her for this one. Lovely jump for the first one, Helen.
Yeah, really excellent header. She scored two very good headers and had another one that came close. She's obviously a talented player in the air. She's not the biggest, but she doesn't half get up well. You have to also say that Jamaica perhaps gave her too much room, didn't mark her tightly enough. When you've got a player of that ability in and around the penalty area, she needs to be marked a lot better. But you can't take anything away from the finish. I thought both headers were exceptionally executed and fully deserved.
As a striker, tempted to try the low ponytail?
Yeah, we did speak about that. Maybe that might improve my heading ability, which sometimes leaves a little bit to be desired. So maybe I'll give that a go in my next game.
For Sam Kerr's fourth goal, Jamaica goalkeeper Nicole McClure really caught out there, Helen, for that one.
She was, and she'll be disappointed looking back on it that she didn't clear the ball. She had enough time to get rid of it. But you have to give Sam Kerr credit, because she could easily have given up the chase, not put her under the pressure that she did, because the game was essentially won at that point. But she's a goal scorer. She's, like a lot of players in this world, almost carrying the weight of expectation on her shoulders for her country and her team. And she chased it down, put her under pressure, and finished it well. And that's a sign of a good forward. She's hungry for goals. A hat-trick wasn't enough. She wanted that fourth one, and rounded off her night very nicely.
So, Tim, it makes the competition for the Golden Boot very interesting indeed, because Kerr joins Alex Morgan on 5 goals so far for this tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. And when Alex Morgan on match day one scores 5 goals, you think to yourself, well, that's kind of the Golden Boot market.
You totally do, don't you?
But, you know, since then, obviously, Cristiani's got 4 as well. Wendy Renard is still in there. I think she was 100-1. Before the tournament for the Golden Boot, and she's got 3. Carly Lloyd, see Girelli as well of Italy. But yeah, Sam Kerr's kind of kept this, you know, if we think of it in terms of betting market, she's definitely kept this market alive.
And she's come into it late on, I suppose, because after their first game, Australia, that loss, you'd never have thought it, would you?
No, indeed. And also, she had a big influence on 2 goals in the Brazil game. I know we spoke about this at the time, but essentially 2 of the Brazil goals, she kind of didn't get a touch, but very, very influential. When kind of, and Australia seemed to be doing this a lot, kind of putting crosses in towards her, which when you look at her build as a striker, you wouldn't kind of associate her as a kind of target striker.
Mm.
But Australia seemed to have this tactic of whipping balls in towards her, and it's really paying off for them at the moment.
Well, like their debutante counterparts, South Africa, Jamaica have a goal to take home from this World Cup. Havana Salon just into the second half, and you could see the joy on their faces. It must have meant the world. But Bunny Shaw, Khadija Shaw, Helen, has been a disappointment in this one. Very little to take from the game. And she was started, wasn't she, just out of position?
She was. She played in a deeper position in midfield, which for her isn't going to help her in terms of goal scoring opportunities. But I do think it helped Jamaica as a team to create a little bit more today. And, you know, the scoreline suggests it was comfortable for Australia, but Jamaica did cause them a few problems, and that will be pleasing. She'll be disappointed not to have taken one or two of her chances that she has had throughout the tournament.
She was moved up, wasn't she, later into the game?
Yeah, but it's difficult when you're in a team that is such underdogs, and it's a really tough group. Italy, Australia and Brazil are all fantastic sides, and we've seen that. The fact that they've all finished on 6 points shows how strong they are. So it's not easy to score goals at this level. She is the superstar of Jamaica, and she came into this tournament rightly with a lot of expectation, but I think she'll be proud that they're there as a start. And OK, yeah, she hasn't scored and hasn't particularly shown up brilliantly in front of goal, but it's something for them all to build on. And I don't think you can be too harsh on her in this tournament.
Well, joining us post-match now, Alicia Ferguson, former Matilda with 66 caps, working out in France for Opta Sport. Really pleased you've joined us, Alicia. Thank you. Give us some reaction then post-match. What's been going on in the press conferences?
Lots of stuff. Relief, excitement, joy, happiness. Yeah, all of the above, Kate. We got there, and Sam Kerr getting that fourth. I mean, scoring four goals in a World Cup is a tremendous achievement anyway. And she's coming for a little bit of criticism about her performances, maybe not being involved in the game too much. So she has shut everyone's mouth up, I think.
She certainly has. At least she hasn't told them to suck on that one, mate, again.
Yeah, I know. Look, what I mean, yeah, that's very, I wouldn't say typically Sam. Sam's a very... She's outgoing, and she says what she thinks, and I appreciate the rawness of her approach to life. But I thought that was a bit of a giggle, to be honest. I didn't read too much into it.
So what's the reaction been like from the Australian manager, Ante Milicic?
Ante basically said that, so we got caught, we conceded a goal just due to our poor transition from having the ball and then giving it over, and Jamaica really punished us for that. And so he still wants to work on that. So there's still a lot, I think, defensively that we need to tighten up at the back. And there's still issues there. You know, we got caught in behind a couple of times, and Jamaica, if they had a bit better accuracy shooting on target, then we could have been in a little bit of trouble.
Listen, the Australian public and media were really critical of the team after that first loss for the side of your first group stage game. Are they a bit happier now after your recent results?
Yeah, everyone loves a winner, don't they? I mean,
especially in Australia.
It covers the manner of all sins, I think. And we knew ourselves that performance against Italy wasn't good enough, and we're still very aware that there's still lots of things that we need to improve on. But I think that awareness is really important. We're not resting on our laurels. You know, this is a good win, excellent to qualify through in second, to take on Norway and Nice. That's a big boost for us, I think. So, bring on Nice.
Are you feeling confident about that one, though?
I think so. I think as this tournament progresses, I just think we're building more and more resilience. We haven't played Norway for a little while, and I definitely think we'd be confident. Far more confident than if we came third and had to play against France or Germany. I think we're all pretty honest with ourselves that would have been absolutely horrendous to come up against one of those two in the round of 16. But I think this is a really good opportunity for us to get through the quarterfinal.
Alicia Ferguson, thank you so much for talking to us working out in France for Opta Sport. We shall let you continue to soak up the glory. Well done.
Thanks. Enjoy the rest of the tournament.
So the final position in Group C then, Italy top the group with 3 wins out of 3 and will most likely face Nigeria, China or Chile. Australia come in second and will take on Norway. Brazil finish third and will come up against France or Germany. Jamaica, they're out.
Hello, Offside Rulers. This is producer Ben from the Totally Football Show, here to politely suggest that when you're done with Kate and Co, why don't you mosey on over to us at the Totally Football Show, where we have new shows for you every Monday and Thursday throughout the summer. Currently, we've got James Horncastle telling us why Paul Pogba may not get his move away from Man United.
Where's Pogba going to go? Because ultimately, you look at Real Madrid. Real Madrid have already splurged a hell of a lot of money. Can they go with Pogba? I look at it and I think Juventus is perhaps a more realistic destination for him, because they've got bargaining chips that they can move around. But it's still going to, for both Real Madrid and Juventus, it's going to be a huge onerous deal for them to do.
We've got Jack Lang at the Copa America talking about goals like this. And we've got Ian McIntosh looking back on the time that Tony Pulis did this.
Once, while interviewing him at West Brom, when we had a chat over breakfast and he slapped my bum on the way into the canteen.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I was absolutely fine with that.
So search for the award-winning Totally Football Show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audioboom and all the usual places and keep up to date with what we're doing at The Totally Show.
You're listening to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition with myself, Kate Borsay, and in the studio, Wales international and Watford striker Helen Ward, and the journalist with more Brazilian knowledge than most, it's Tim Stillman. Well, let's go to England. They're already safe, but can the Lionesses make it 3 wins out of 3 to top the group? Phil Neville's side know that a point against Argentina will be good enough to top that Group D, regardless of how the other game finishes. A win for Japan would see the 2015 runners-up take the top spot instead. Helen, as the neutral here, and by the way, you're here to keep us all sane, particularly me, will this be the pick of England's group games?
Potentially. I think if you looked at the games beforehand, without thinking of the order of them, Japan would be likely to be the toughest test. However, England are already through, which is the pressure slightly off for them. And also when you add Scotland into the mix with the local rivalry, that you could argue that that was the pick of the games. But I think, you know, aside from the fact they are through already, they will want to top the group. It will be something that will be a big achievement for them. 3 wins out of 3 would be a very good return in what isn't an easy group. It should be a very exciting game. Both sides have got something to play for and both sides are more than capable of beating the other. So it should be a really exciting game tomorrow.
Is it always interesting to see players who you've played alongside, like Carly Telford, Fran Kirby, Mary Earps, Karen Carney, although Mary, of course, hasn't featured yet. But is it always interesting for you to watch how those players are doing, particularly when you're looking at this tournament as a neutral?
Yeah, definitely. You always look out for former teammates and, you know, Carly in particular, I played with her for quite a while at Chelsea and still someone that I'm in touch with now. It was really nice to see her get a first World Cup appearance in the second game against Argentina and keeping a clean sheet, especially with, you know, the sad loss of her mum as well. It would have been a really proud moment for her and her family. So it was good to see that. And, you know, it's always nice to see players that you have played with doing so well on the big stage because it shows the kind of level that they're at and how good their careers have gone on to be. I haven't played with a lot of them, any of them, for a long time now, but it's nice to see them do well.
You must have played with Fran Kirby when she was quite young. Did you have a notion of how good she could become?
Yeah, so when I signed for Reading, she'd not long been back from the World University Games where she had a phenomenal tournament. I believe she won Player of the Tournament when GB won it. So I'd heard of her before, and then when I turned up I saw this kid with the short hair and, you know, running rings around everyone at training. I thought, yeah, she's definitely got something about her. And in the couple of years that I was there, she scored goal after goal for Reading in WSL2 and obviously then made the step up to Chelsea, which everybody expected at the time. She'd done so well, and to be selected for a World Cup off the back of playing for a second tier side, yes, was something that was unheard of, really. Yeah. You know, with the players that England have got at their disposal, it showed how special a talent that she was. And she's probably one of the best finishers that I've played alongside.
But yet we haven't seen this yet from her as well, which must be frustrating for you to watch, knowing how good a player it is. Also frustrating for us to watch as fans as well, because we've had such an insight into this as well. What does Phil Neville need to do with Fran Kirby?
It's a tough one. It's a really hard one to manage. She's had, I think we've mentioned before, she's had an up and down season or couple of seasons really with injuries. Obviously last year she won a lot of individual awards. Chelsea did ever so well, and then the season just gone wasn't quite the same for club as a club or individually. And that maybe has taken its toll. She's got a lot more expectation on her shoulders now compared to when she did first break into the team. And that does weigh on your mind, especially as a forward. You go through these spells where you're not perhaps scoring, and that's what you're judged on. Mm. And I know how much she enjoys scoring goals because you can see it in how she plays.
Would this be the first time in her career that she's encountered that? Because, you know, as a striker, you've got, you know, years more experience. You will have had these fallow periods as well. And it's learning, you know, you've learned how to manage it, but has Fran potentially? You know,
yeah, it is really hard, and I do have a real sense of empathy with strikers that go through this. Whenever I'm watching football, if I know there's a forward that hasn't scored in a while and people are getting on their back, I always have that sense of I really feel for them. And Fran's no different. It's a difficult time. As I said, you're judged on goals. Despite what you might do for the rest of the game, you are judged on your goals, and she'll know that. And you do judge yourself on goals as well. You might have a rubbish game, but if you score 2 goals, you leave happy. she is still so young and she'll have more World Cups and more European Championships. I've no doubt about that. And it's just up to Phil to keep her head up, which I'm sure he does. I've heard a lot about his man management skills. He keeps putting faith in her and that'll do her the world of good in terms of confidence. You know, he's not hooking her after half an hour or an hour of a game that she hasn't scored in. She's starting games and he still sees her as a go-to player. And I've no doubt that at some point she'll do something that will just click. It'll come in off of her backside or something like that. And and everything will be right with her again and she'll go on another good run. But it is a difficult time. But, you know, she may well step up in the next round, the quarterfinal, semi-final, and come up with that big moment. And all of a sudden she's the hero again.
I like the fact that you've got us down for the quarters and the semis. Good faith. Thank you very much, Helen. Tim, an England win would mean them coming up against a third place team from either B, E or F in the final 16. That's China confirmed, by the way. Then, by my reckoning, New Zealand or Chile. However, a loss tomorrow night would see them face the Netherlands or Canada. That's not a situation England want. They have come up against Japan, though, already this year.
Yeah, in the She Believes. And, you know, if you just look at the score, and in fact, if you just look at the game, England were very dominant. They won 3-0. But Japan, they were very brave, actually, in that game, because that was effectively a final and they decided to put out a really experimental young team. And I saw the Japanese coach was talking about this in her press conference today, and she says, we don't regret that. That's all part of the process. We had an eye on the long term and we had an eye on the World Cup when we did that. So I don't think, you know, even if people watch that game or if they're just aware of the score, don't be fooled by the fact that England beat Japan 3-0 recently, because this will be a completely different game against a bit of a different team.
Well, out in France, soaking in the sunshine, it's over to our roving reporter, Lindsay Hooper, or should that be Laundry Hooper?
Thank you, by the way, for that lovely compliment on the podcast yesterday. She's great to spend laundry time with. Brilliant.
Forget about the football analysis.
Go round and round. There's Lindsay. Brilliant. But my laundry woes have continued today because there is no iron in my hotel room. There is no ironing board, so you have to go down to reception to ask for it.
Can I hazard a guess that you might have had a bit of a huff over this incident?
I have had a little huff. It might have been overheard. I waited for this iron and the ironing board for, I don't know, about 4 hours.
Ooh.
And then when I finally got it, it didn't work.
Oh, dear. Double blow for Lindsay Hooper there. Laundry Hooper, sorry.
So if anyone saw me with a crinkled shirt today at the press conference, that is why.
Talk about kicking off in reception. I hear that there's a few famous names in your hotel. I hope they didn't see your performance.
There are. And actually, I've seen the biggest name that's here today, Serena Williams.
Ooh.
I'm keeping my voice down. Why am I doing that? she's here with her daughter and a few entourage, I'm sure. Yeah. Watching the tennis, doing a bit of tennis training, because the hotel that we're staying in Cannes is very famous for tennis coaching. And there's so many courts. The facilities here are quite incredible, actually, for that.
And I gather that Mike Tyson's there as well.
Yes, Mike Tyson's been seen in the gym.
So next time you need to kick off about that iron, Lindsay, I suggest you knock on Mike's door. He'd get it seen too.
I think I'm more likely to run away.
Possibly, yes. Listen, you've been to the press conference ahead of this England fixture, of course. Tell us what Phil Neville's had to say.
So he spoke quite a few times about mutual respect within this match. So I think that's something that we can expect on the pitch from both parties. There were quite a lot of Japanese journalists at the press conference and they were putting many questions to Phil, asking how much the game meant, whether there was going to be much rotation. Now, he said that there isn't going to be. He's going to be playing his strongest team. But I think if you read between the lines, what he believes to be his strongest team in terms of how to tactically line up against Japan probably does mean a few changes.
Yeah, because he said this best side line again, right, which we've heard from him before every single game, which basically means we don't have a clue.
And I think it doesn't mean we don't have a clue. I think it means that we have a solid 23 squad. And so that's our best team. Yeah. Any of those players can be our best team. I think that's what he's always trying to say.
Do you think he's going to do a Jill Ellis and use every single outfield player?
Potentially, yeah. I can see quite a few changes for this one. I think he might rest, even though Lucy Bronze was at the press conference. I have a feeling she might be rested. I don't know. And then just guessing as you go down the lineup, I would have thought that Kira Walsh will get more time. I would have thought Millie Bright will come back in. I would have thought that Kaz Kani's got a good shot of getting more game minutes.
Yeah. What about players like Leah Williamson? Because obviously that's a tough one, because she'd have to come in really in Steph Horton's position. And then also Lucy Staniforth as well is yet to play any time, isn't she?
the thing with Steph is, I imagine as a player, especially as England captain, that there is a lot of pride that goes along with playing every minute of a tournament. And that's something that I can imagine that she would really want to do. So whether she gets rested or not, I mean, that remains to be seen in terms of tomorrow's team sheet. It will be a surprise if she does, I think, for a lot of people. But it wouldn't be a completely nonsensical move, would it, to rest some of the key players for the next stage? But I mean, finishing top of the group is important. And both teams were saying that in this press conference, you know, the press conference beforehand as well with Japan, they were saying how much it would mean to them to be able to finish top of the group, because you look at that path that's ahead. So maybe there won't be those huge changes that some people are hazarding a guess at.
And what's the French word that you've learnt for us?
Le foot.
Oh, for God's sake. Lindsay Hooper there, our roving reporter out living it up in France. Helen, let's mention Tony Duggan quickly, a player that Lindsay didn't talk about. She's fit. Is she a sure starter for this one?
I don't think any of the team are a sure starter. You never quite know with Phil Neville, but he'll definitely be pleased to have her available and have his full complement of players. She is a match winner, she can score goals, and she's got a decent record at international level, and she'll be desperate to get herself her first World Cup goal, which she didn't quite get in 2015, so she'll be raring to go and hopefully fighting fit.
Yeah, it was quite a frustrating tournament for her in 2015. Helen, Jodie Taylor could also feature, and I love this. You told me earlier that you roomed with her for England under-23s before you became Welsh.
Yeah, so I was called into an under-23 tournament about 12 years ago, I think, and I roomed with her for one night only, and it was only half a night because I turned up very late because it was a late call-up. And
it was so bad, you became Welsh.
And no. Yeah, and then I decided, no, it wasn't for me, and off I went over the bridge. But no, she was my roommate for one night, and then for some reason things got swapped. Maybe I snored, I don't know.
Jodie, it was nothing to do with you, I promise. Tim, a lot of Japanese media at the pre-match press conference today, and their midfielder Emi Nakajima said that England's style of play will make it easy to create gaps in the game.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting comment. Obviously, they've played Japan and Argentina, who were a little bit tighter, but actually something Phil Neville said was quite interesting. He kind of said their strength is their system. Japan don't really have a star player, but at their best, they're so fluid, they just pop the ball around. And I think what makes this game so fascinating is Japan's technical level is higher than England's, but England's physical level is probably higher than Japan's, so it's a real kind of clash of styles.
All right, well, it's not all about England, as ever in Group D. Scotland have a chance of getting through to the round of 16. More on that next. OK, so it's now or never for the Scots, isn't it, as they attempt to salvage any last World Cup hope. Only a win against Argentina will be enough to keep the dream alive, and they still then have to rely on other results going their way to qualify as one of the best third-place teams. Helen, if we consider the recent performances that we've seen from Argentina, have Scotland simply left it too late to try and salvage something?
I don't think so. I think they've mentioned, Shelley Kerr and some of the players have mentioned, that this was always the game that they were targeting for 3 points. Obviously, they'd have hoped to have got something out of the first two, but that wasn't to be. So they knew it was going to kind of be last chance saloon, I guess. That was their part of their plan, without being too negative. Argentina have showed up pretty well, a lot better than expected, but they are yet to score a goal, which could play into Scotland's hands a little bit. They're going to have to score themselves, which may open them up and may give Scotland the opportunity. Scotland have already scored in both their games against tough opposition, so that pressure's not there for them, and they've proved they can do it, and they know they can do it. So I'm hoping for an open game with both teams left with something to play for. Yeah. And a real chance of going into the next round. So I'm hoping that will play into Scotland's hands a little bit.
And that's a great point there. In order to qualify as one of the best placed third teams, Argentina do have to score. So they are going to have to open up. They are going to have to play a slightly different game. If Scotland were to manage a win and qualify for the last 16, Tim, it's looking likely that they'll face either France or Germany. Ouch!
Yeah, nice easy game, that one, whichever way that goes. Yeah, and that would be, I mean, that would be superb for them, you know, as a kind of emerging football nation, I think it's fair to say.
What, Scotland?
Yeah, and when I say emerging...
Women's football.
So I don't mean developing, but emerging in terms of coming into their first World Cup. But I sense this kind of tension with Scotland, with the way they're playing. And it's understandable in their first two games they've been a bit cagey and tight. But when you look at some of the players they've got...
They don't look comfortable, do they?
No. I mean, players like Caroline Weir, Kim Little, you know, they're used to taking teams on in the domestic game when they play for Arsenal and Manchester City. And I'm not sure... And Erin Cuthbert as well. I'm not sure.
But they're going to have to take this one on, though, aren't they? So maybe
they really are.
Maybe Shelley Kerr's just going to say, go out and do it. Whatever you need to do, go out and do it. Perhaps the critique of her is that she's tried to be too tactical.
Indeed. And actually what they've shown in the first two games is when they went a couple of goals down and they had to do that, they've managed to score and make a game of it right at the end. And what they've got to do is not wait until the 70th minute to start attacking Argentina and really go at them from the off, because I think they've certainly got the players to do it.
Well, out in Paris, soaking up the atmosphere, it's Heather Jewett, BBC Scotland women's sport reporter, who's found herself in a very friendly Scottish pub.
Yes, you know, there are actually two pubs that we found here. One is called the Highlander. Went into that yesterday. No Scots. There were some Americans and there were some French people, but no Scots. So tonight we found a bar called the Old Alliance, which is really old, actually. It's been here for quite some time. And I'm very happy to say there are lots of Scots here thronging around the pub tonight, because there's going to be a bit of a ceilidh here this evening. They call it the next to four. And the next to four, the big match, of course, tomorrow. So, yeah, there's quite a few guys wandering around in their kilts, lots of Scotland strips on. So, yeah, really nice atmosphere, actually. I think you should get down here and try it out yourself at some point. No, it is. It's really good. It's just nice to see some fans. I'm going to be totally honest with you. Struggled to find some Scotland fans up until this afternoon, because Paris is so big. It's not like Rennes or Nice. Nice was fantastic for that. Fans really started arriving on the Saturday, really came in their throngs all around the fan zones. And then it was pretty much the same the day before the game in Rennes. But in Paris, it's a lot harder because obviously it's far more spread out and it's a lot bigger. So this is where a lot of fans are congregating tonight. So it's nice to see.
You found yourself a home from home. I'm going to ask a question on everyone's lips. Are you going to be partaking in the ceilidh tonight?
I'm not going to be partaking in any drinks at all. But you know what? Some of my colleagues have actually been partaking in some haggis, chips and beans. And I've spoken to a few fans who've also had that. So they've come all the way to Paris for their tea. The pad haggis, chips and beans. So I don't know what you make of that, but there you go. But apparently it was very nice.
That's almost worse than Lindsay Hooper having ham, egg and chips out in France. Honestly.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Honestly,
fantastic.
We don't know what to do with her. All right, let's look ahead to the match tomorrow. Shelley Kerr has been speaking to the media, and the big story around this has been she's had a very friendly face that's been in contact with her.
Yes, Alex Ferguson. Whenever he calls people, they do tend to make quite a big deal of it, because, of course, he's such a big legend in the game, isn't he? But, you know, Shelley Kerr was saying earlier in the press conference today that he was very complimentary. She wouldn't go into specifics about exactly what he'd said, keeping it all a bit hush-hush. But he apparently did say he told her that he was really disappointed with some of the decisions that have been made against Scotland so far in this World Cup. The Scots, of course, receiving that VAR decision against them in the match against England, where Nikita Paris went on to score the penalty. Then there were two claims for a penalty in the match against Japan, which were waved away by the referee. So, yeah, interesting to see that, you know, he's given her a bit of a call, given her a bit of a boost and said, you know, we're behind you. And apparently we'll be tuning in for the game.
Sir Alex Ferguson getting involved is a great thing for them. Team news. Do we have any hints from what Shelley Kerr might be going with? Are we likely to see goal scorer against Japan, Lana Clennon, starting?
You know, that's quite a tough one, actually. I think Shelley Kerr's got quite a tough decision to make on that, whether it's Erin Cuthbert up front or Lana Clennon. I mean, that goal she scored in the final moments of the match against Japan was an absolute belter. She, of course, plays at Fiorentina. She's got a really nice touch. I mean, who knows what she'll do, but they are going to be playing attacking. So she might start with her, or she might start with Erin and then move into Lana later on in the game. But whether she changes things up dramatically for the match against Argentina, who knows? But defensively, they've got to be strong. But offensively, I would expect them to go all guns blazing.
So in a word, are Scotland going to make it through to the round of 16?
That is a tough one. Will they make it through? If you'd asked me this before the start of the competition, I would have said that they could beat Argentina. I'm not so sure after seeing Argentina play and how well they defended in their games that there'll be an easy ride in this competition. And I think a lot of it will come down to the fitness on the park as well. And Scotland's women are very fit. So if they can maintain that level of fitness and also play offensively, I think that we'll see a Scotland win.
Heather Dewar, BBC Scotland Women's Sport reporter there, and best of luck to Scotland for that fixture. OK, it's our favourite part of the show. Not the end, but the scoreline predictions for tomorrow. Let's start with Scotland versus Argentina. The winner gives themselves a good chance of getting through to the round of 16. Helen?
I'm going to go for a cagey 1-0 win to Scotland.
Oh, Tim, keeping the faith?
That was exactly what I was going to go for.
Oh, weird psychic energy between our guests today.
I'm going to say 2-0 Scotland.
And England versus Japan in the fight for top spot, Helen?
I'm going to go a score draw, maybe 2-2. I fancy both teams to get a goal or two.
Okay.
I think England are going to win 2-1.
Yes. All right. Thank you very much, Helen. You're back in tomorrow to see if you're correct. Tim, you're off the hook until later on in the week, I think. In the meantime, there's a new Carly Telford column out on offsiderulepodcast.com. Rich Laverty for the Offside Rule speaking to her on making her World Cup debut against Argentina. Don't miss that one. And we're on Instagram and Twitter at offsiderulepod for all your social media needs. Do get in touch with us, by the way, as well, please. Let us know what you think of the show. And any questions you have, send them over. Tim and Helen, thank you very much for your work today. We'll be back tomorrow with another podcast. But until then, au revoir.
The Offside Rule Women's World Cup Edition is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with Spotify.